This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello and welcome to Scran, the podcast passionate about the Scottish food and drink scene. I'm your host, Rosalind Erskine, and it's that time of the year when thoughts turn to Valentine's Day. Love it or hate it, we can all get on board with one of the more palatable trappings of the season, chocolate. On this episode, I enjoyed a first-time experience pairing whiskey and chocolate. The results were surprising. I was guided by Rachel McCormack, author of Chasing the Jam, and Cameron Dixon of Bare Bones Chocolate. Then I headed north to speak to Jamie Hutchin, who, from a young age, was enchanted by the kitchen. He turned this passion into a career and now runs Coco Ooze. He tells me about the challenges faced by a small chocolate business and all about why he loves it so much. I'm in the Pot Still pub in Glasgow. It's a lovely way to be spending a Wednesday with Rachel McCormack and Cameron Dixon from Bare Bones, and we're going to chat about pairing whiskey with chocolate. So Rachel, could you just tell me a bit about how you got to this point, because you've set up a subscription service for whiskey and chocolate pairing?
Well, the reason that I did this was I did an event in the summer with Spencer Hyman from Cocoa Runners, and what Spencer does is Spencer buys in all of the best craft chocolate from around the world and then sells it on his website. And you know, he's got Bare Bones chocolate, but he's also got chocolate from Madagascar, and he's got chocolate that's made in Ecuador. So he's got chocolate from all over the world, but it's proper craft chocolate. So it's chocolate makers buying the cocoa beans, roasting themselves, and then make the chocolate. So what you end up with is a lot of bars that have really different tastes, even though a lot of the time they've only got three ingredients. And whiskey's only got three ingredients. It's really only got water, a grain, and yeast, and nothing else. And craft chocolate is the same, so you're essentially buying a bar of chocolate, but it's a completely different experience from buying mass-produced chocolate. And it's a completely different experience from buying a chocolatier's chocolate, because a chocolatier maybe makes a truffle that's like a flavoured chocolate. That's more like a cocktail. These bars are more like having whiskey, because they are all the same ingredients with massively different tastes, depending on the cocoa beans they've used, the percentage of sugar they've used, how the chocolate maker themselves has made the chocolate. And it's really the same with whiskey, and it really amazed me about how, to me, it's normal that a whiskey with the same ingredients tastes really different, and it wasn't normal that chocolate with the same ingredients could taste incredibly different. So I've really just fallen in love in the past few months with craft chocolate, and I've basically spent about 6 months drinking whiskey and eating chocolate.
Which sounds amazing.
It sometimes isn't as good as it sounds. You get to the point where you sit and you're sweating whiskey and chocolate, thinking everybody thinks that the NHS are the heroes of 2021. No one is thinking of me. But, you know, there are worse ways to spend a day.
What's your background? I mean, you've been in whiskey for a long time, is that right?
Actually, my background is what I know about is Spanish food. I do a radio programme on Radio 4 sometimes called The Kitchen Cabinet, but I worked quite a lot of years in London doing a lot of promotion of Catalan food, because that was the food in Spain that I knew the most. What happened was nobody wanted to give me a book deal, because it was coming to the point where, because my surname is not López and neither is my granny's surname López, nobody wanted to give me a book deal at all about Spanish food. And then I kind of was looking at Scotland and whisky, realising that so much of what I know about Spanish food and culture in Scotland is very much around whisky. People do and say things about whisky that Spanish people do and say about food. You know, if you see people who like whisky from Scotland, very often their favourite whisky is either the one they had with their parents or the whisky from the place that's near where they're from. And that kind of localness is with whisky is something that I don't think Scottish people actually pay much attention to. So that was my interest in whisky, was very much about it culturally and what it means to Scotland in the way that food and wine means to Spanish people. So that's kind of how I got into whisky. And then I found it really, really interesting. as well, the different flavours you get from the same ingredients. And it's now kind of how I've got into craft chocolate, because again, it's the different flavours you get from the same ingredients.
And are you seeing this as a way to kind of bring more people into whisky, or is it just part of people's education, or what's the kind of goal for this?
Honest, what I really think we need to do is it's trying to bring people that drink whisky into craft chocolate, because I think they're missing out. I think they see chocolate as something quite frivolous, and they're maybe used to very sweet truffles. And I think people that like the different flavours of whisky would really like the different flavours of chocolate if they gave it a chance and paid attention. I mean, one of the problems you have, I think, about selling craft chocolate is that you can buy a bar for £1 in the supermarket, whereas, you know, craft chocolate bars maybe start about £6-7 and can be as much as £10 and £11. At the same time, people who are in whisky understand that you can buy a bottle of whisky in the supermarket for £10, and they don't buy that. They go and buy other things because they understand that what they're getting what they pay for. And trying to get whisky people more into chocolate is a really good way of doing things. One of the other things I think is the whisky industry is kind of where the craft chocolate industry would like to be, in that, you know, people get a decent wage for growing barley for the whisky industry. You know, farmers in Aberdeenshire do quite well out of the whisky industry. And traditionally, cocoa farmers have done incredibly badly out of the chocolate industry. You know, they've destroyed the rainforest, you know, there's child slavery problems. And the big thing, I think, with craft chocolate is because they're buying the beans direct, often there are really big projects where the farmers are getting paid three times the amount that they were getting paid from someone else. It's given them a chance to grow back the rainforest. They're growing really good types of cocoa beans, so you're getting different types of cocoa beans on the market, and they're able to educate their kids. And I think that's something that people that like whisky should really help to support, because in the end, one of the reasons the whisky industry is so successful is because the people in the industry are treated well.
And just to go back to a little bit about you, your knowledge and understanding of Spanish food and culture, is that a family thing?
Well, I lived there for about 7 years. I lived there for most of my 20s, so that was what I knew. So when I moved to London and started to do food stuff, I just did Spanish food stuff because that was what I knew. And I knew something about Scottish food, but not very much.
Is your family like foodies, or did you come from that kind of background?
I think we probably, when I was growing up, spent more on food than most people did. Yeah, I suppose. I mean, for them, food was something important. I mean, if we had extra money, we got better food. We didn't get more stuff. You know, they kind of moved from, say, sausage casseroles twice a week to steak once a week when there was more money. So, yeah, they were quite interested in food and they could see the importance of it.
To just go back to the chocolate whisky, it's available now, is that right?
Yeah, it's available online on the Cocoa Runners website. So if you look up the Cocoa Runners website, you'll see we've got, you can sign up and you can get a gift box, or you can get like a subscription and you'll get 350 mils of whisky and 3 chocolate bars every month. And I think our third box will feature some Bare Bones chocolate. Can't remember exactly with which whisky, so I might have to try that again. I might have to try the whisky again to see which goes. But in the third box, you'll be getting some Bare Bones whisky in the box.
How does that sort of sit with you? I mean, obviously it's quite good for you, but is this like a new sort of way for you to think about your chocolate?
Yeah, definitely. Because at the start, all we were doing was experimenting with chocolate and just focusing on how to get the most incredible flavours from a cocoa bean. And we did that for a long time, and then we paired it with wine, and that was incredible. And then when we sat down with Rachel and tasted some whiskies, it was just this whole other revelation again. The two, when they pair, it's incredible, because flavours come from each that you don't expect.
So we're going to do a whisky and chocolate tasting now. As I said, we're in the pot still, so that's where we've got the whiskies from. And we've got 3 whiskies and 3 chocolates. So Rachel, what are the whiskies and what are the chocolates?
So the first is a Glencadam number 10, a 10-year-old. So it's quite a soft Highland whisky. And I'm really surprised at what I found it went with the other day. It's a milk chocolate from a company called Pump Street, who are based in Suffolk, and it's a 58% Madagascar milk chocolate. So their beans are from Madagascar, from an estate. It was set up by a Swedish guy who was trying to kind of do that thing where cocoa farmers were getting a decent living. So they created this big estate to make really good cocoa beans. So we're doing, that's the first one. The second one is an Auchentoshan 12, and it's been aged in a cherry cask and a bourbon cask, and it's, now to remember it, it's normally got quite a hazelnutty flavours, and we're going to try it with both of the chocolates that Cameron has brought. He's brought a 70% Madagascar, and you'll see again the totally different taste, and beans that Cameron gets of the Madagascar are just beside the Atkinson's plantation, but you'll see it's a really different taste of chocolate, which again I think is really interesting for whisky drinkers. But we're going to try the Auchentoshan with both the Madagascar and his single origin is salted dark milk chocolate, which is 68% from the Dominican Republic, with the Auchentoshan. And then we've got an Ardbeg 10, which is, you know, kind of your standard Islay whiskey, which is really peaty. And we've got different chocolates, so we're just going to see which one that matches with, or if it matches with one of the Bare Bones chocolates or something else we've got. So all you have to do is just try it and see how that goes.
Would it be obvious to someone who's maybe not as experienced as you that, oh, this goes really well, or this doesn't go so well? Is it an obvious sort of thing, or are you relying on someone saying, okay, these go well together?
The thing is, it's not been codified yet. Like, craft chocolate and whiskey is really a new, pairing them is a really new thing. So, well, the problem that we have is we're not quite sure yet. It's really just practicing. Genuinely, it's been me, or being me with Cameron and Lara, or being me in London with Spencer, just eating chocolate and trying whiskey. So at the moment, I'm not sure. We've not quite got it codified yet, because we're still in the exploration. I think a lot of it is you just got to try. And I mean, I have sat there and thought, oh, that'll go really well with that. And then I've tried the whiskey and tried the chocolate and got, oh, that doesn't work. And then something else that I've thought, oh, that won't go, let's try it. And we try it and we're like, that's amazing. First thing you do is you take the whiskey and then you smell the whiskey. So this is like the Glencadam. And then you have a wee sip of the whiskey and you can let that go right round your mouth. So you've got the flavours of that, which is kind of quite soft, it's kind of green. And then what you do is you take a tiny bit of the chocolate, so I'll give it to you, and don't chew it. What you do with the chocolate is you let the chocolate melt in your mouth until you've got the proper flavour of the chocolate. And once it's started to melt and you can feel the flavour of the chocolate in your mouth, you can feel the textures of it coating your mouth. Coconuts have done a big flavour wave that you can actually just download from their website about how the chocolate tastes, so that you can start to look at that and see whether something's silky, whether it's soft, or whether it's oily, or whether it's waxy, what kind of textures it has, what kind of flavours it's got in your mouth. And when you've still got a wee bit of chocolate in your mouth and you can still taste the chocolate, have another wee bit of whiskey, and you should see that what you should get is a third flavour.
I've made a rookie mistake by putting the whole bit in at once.
A tiny bit in. Well, I've got used to putting tiny bits in because I end up having to taste so much. Have you got the flavour in your mouth now? Have another wee bit of whiskey. Now, that to me brings out almost a sulphur taste at the very beginning of the whiskey. You get a creaminess in the chocolate that you didn't get with the chocolate on its own. And I think you get a really nice aftertaste that doesn't, it's not a burnt, but you get more wood from the whiskey. And then the chocolate, if you keep it going a wee bit, it's not as sweet as it was. It's a really different thing, I think. You get the, because people have been doing chocolate and wine flavourings, but some pairings, but one of the reasons I think whiskey works better is because it's got those stronger flavours than wine has, obviously, because they're more concentrated. So when you have the flavours concentrated of chocolate and then you've got the flavours of the whiskey, it's they match better, that you get a much better hit. The only problem is when it doesn't work, it makes chocolate taste terrible and whiskey tastes off. And whiskey never goes off. You have a really nice whiskey and a really nice chocolate and they don't go. I mean, Cameron, I'll tell you, we've been in his factory and he's gone, my chocolate's terrible. And we're like, no,
what it's... What are you doing to us,
Rachel? it's like, no, it's not. I mean, and then he tries it with another whiskey and he's like, oh my God, this is amazing. I didn't know my chocolate tasted like that. So sometimes it doesn't work. And the only way you can know is by trying.
So what do you think of that?
I thought that was really interesting. I thought it brought out a lot more of the caramel notes of the chocolate.
So you're a whiskey drinker anyway, so it's been quite interesting for you to sort of see that side of whiskey.
No, I haven't been drinking whiskey, which has been really interesting. Doing the whiskey tastings with Rachel without chocolate and then with chocolate was pretty amazing. Learning how similar they are.
So now we are...
Now let's try the Auchentoshan 12. Now, I don't know how this will go. So we're going to try this with two different Bare Bones chocolate. It's a 70% Madagascar bean. It's a dark chocolate, so it doesn't have any milk powder in it. And there's another one, which is a 68% Dominican chocolate, and it's got salt in it. And salt generally goes incredibly well with a briny whiskey, but we're going to try it with an Auchentoshan, which is quite soft and got quite a lot of hazelnut notes. And it might not work. But you have lovely chocolate and you have lovely whiskey and we need to give it a go.
Yeah, this could be interesting.
You want to finish your... Just
down it. It's quite rich in your mouth. Like, mm-hmm. I can see why you've been needing to drink lots of water and stuff.
You start to get a feel for things, but I think in the next... I mean, I think, to be honest, one of the things that we'll do with the whiskey and chocolate is we will start codifying it in the next few months. At the moment, we're just kind of playing around and experimenting and seeing what works. But there's probably another couple of people that we'll work with. There's a Professor of Philosophy at Taste at UCL, Barry Smith, and he'll probably work with us to help codify what works and what doesn't so that we've got a much better idea than just try some. But the problem is we're at such early stages right now, it is very much try chocolate, try whiskey, see what you think.
And when you say codify, do you mean put it down as in this is definitely how things are going to work?
There are always exceptions. It's the same with any kind of wine tasting or any kind of chocolate. You know, you make a chocolate, you take a cocoa bean and you do a certain thing to it and you assume this is a taste you'll get, and it isn't always a taste you get. But ballpark, in the same way, I suppose, with whiskey, you've got ballpark flavours. You know, Isla whiskey, there are some really soft Isla whiskies. There are some whiskies on Isla that don't have any peat in them. But there's a ballpark Isla flavour. There's a ballpark Speyside whiskey. Again, there's a great variety within that. And also nowadays, especially, different distilleries are doing peated whiskies or they're doing unpeated whiskies. So there are always exceptions, but you at least need to know the general direction you're going in, which is what we're going to try and work out in the next sort of next year. That's one of the plans.
Okay.
So, well, we'll try this. See what you think of the open. Yeah. What do you think of the open tosh?
It's nice, really sweet.
It's really sweet and really hazelnutty. And I'm wondering about the dark chocolate with the salt. This will either go be the most amazing thing, or it won't. Let's hope. But I mean, this is the thing. I mean, you start off with really good chocolate like we have, and really good whiskey like we have. You know it'll work. You just have to find the one that works. Let's see. Oh yeah, it's the salt. It's the salt. It's a good idea with that because it's a total contrast. That makes that whiskey taste really different. You don't get the same haze on that note.
You almost get cream tones coming through from the chocolate when paired with the whiskey, although there's no milk, which is really interesting.
It really changes the chocolate. It brings out tones that you didn't notice before, and it does the same with the whiskey. That's what you're looking for. That was unexpected. I wouldn't have automatically gone for something like an Auchentoshan and a dark salted chocolate, but that actually works really well.
Because you were saying earlier the salt would be better with like a kind of briny, kind of almost like seasidey Old Pulteney or something.
Yeah, that was the one we paired this chocolate with before with Old Pulteney, and it was fabulous. But this is really nice, but it's just a different nice. Which I think is, again, it's really interesting. It's they go together and some go better than others, but also you get different ways they go together. This, if we had Old Pulteney, I think you would feel there was notes brought out in the chocolate that aren't being brought out with Auchentoshan, but there are other ones that aren't that you wouldn't notice, that you do notice because you're having Auchentoshan.
It is fascinating because, like you say, both things are three ingredients and the sort of things you can get from them are almost endless when you start putting them together.
I think the problem is that so many people are used to this with wine tasting and end up thinking it's really pretentious. But if you actually pay attention to this kind of thing, it's really good fun. You know, when I always said about whiskey, essentially tasting whiskey and sitting about and getting different flavours, it was like middle-aged clubbing. You know, I mean, I have hung up my hot pants a long, many, many years ago. I think I'd frighten people if I put them on. You know, this is great fun. And I think with chocolate and whiskey, it's even better fun. It's a really, really good thing to do.
And it's, like you say, quite sociable. You can have your pals round and do this. It's like something different.
You know, we all need something different to do that's fun. You know, and even if you're like got pals that are quite far away, you can do it together online, but also you can do it in person with like you bring some whiskey, you bring some chocolate, you bring some whiskey, you bring some chocolate, and we'll all just have it all together.
And what has been your absolute worst?
I genuinely can't remember because most of the time I'm trying whiskey and chocolate, that doesn't work. And because it doesn't work, I don't remember it. I'm just like, that is not going to work. The one I found, the whiskey I found actually really hard to pair at first was Brew Laddie whiskey, just the straight classic Laddie, because it's got a kind of lactic taste. It's not got very many fruits in it. And I think I went through about 15 different dark chocolates, like not the whole bar, but bits of it. And I could not get anything that made Brew Laddie taste better. Everything just made it taste worse, and it didn't go with any chocolates at all. And eventually I found it with a really soft, it was like a 36% chocolate, so it was quite a milky chocolate, kind of had some kind of caramelly flavours in it, and that really changed the Brew Laddie taste and made it really good. But it took me quite a while to find a pairing for the Brew Laddie. So
we're now, are we going to try the 70% with?
So we're going to try then the Ardbeg with the Bare Bones 70%, which is the Madagascar dark chocolate, and see what we think of that. Again, we don't know because we've never tried Ardbeg with this. I think the one that I got to go with this that was really nice was Glengoyne. I had a Glengoyne that went really well with the 70% Madagascar. It was one of their special bottlings. I think it was like their Series 8. And it went really well with Madagascar 70 from Bare Bones. But let's try it with Ardbeg. No. It's not terrible, but it's not doing anything for the chocolate and it's not doing anything for the whiskey. That'll go better. That 70% Madagascar will go better with like a knock and toshing. It's not bringing out anything nice in an Ardbeg, and the Ardbeg's not bringing out anything nice in the chocolate. It's just flattening it completely. So it's not making it horrible, but it's just making it nothing, and that's a really good chocolate with a lot of flavour in it. It'd be better with the Auchentoshan, I think.
So as a chocolate, this Madagascar, 70% dark, should have taste notes of cherry, maple syrup, a nice balanced sweetness, and a little bit of citrus notes.
And you're not getting...
Not with Ardbeg.
Not with the whiskey.
But I think we should try it with Auchentoshan, and I think we'll get what Cameron's saying. One of the problems is because although you've got a guide with somebody's chocolate, so you've got, you know, a Bare Bones chocolate here, it's telling you it's from, you know that it's from a single estate in Madagascar, it's 70% cocoa, it's then maybe got sugar in it, and that's probably all it's got. The problem you have is the way that Bare Bones make their chocolate can be so different to the way that somebody else makes their chocolate, in the same way that whiskey's got the same ingredients, the still shape's slightly different, even if they're all in bourbon barrels for 10 years and it's almost the same barrel, so you get a really different taste. You just generally have to know by knowing. So to know really well what will match, you have to know the chocolate really well. Because percentage-wise, the cocoa bean that it comes from can give you a guide, but unless you've actually tried the chocolate with a whiskey, you won't know. So let's try it with a wee bit of the Auchentoshan. Yeah, that works much better. Because that's also bringing out the hazelnut of the Auchentoshan. See the notes that Cameron was talking about? You can taste them now, whereas the Ardbeg just flattened them. At the end, you can really taste the notes in the chocolate. Because it's a big thing in neuroscience at the moment, all different tastes and flavours and why they go together and why they don't. And, you know, there is a thing about what is just your palate and what actually is a pairing that works. There must be an objective code about which chocolate goes with which whiskey and why, what flavours, notes go together and which ones don't. What I've noticed in the tastings that we do, there's never ever a clear favourite. So if the pairing works, the pairing works. But it's how it works and why it works that we're still trying to learn. Next year we'll try and figure that out with different people and sort of who are already doing research into different tastes and flavours.
Desert Island Drams, if you could only take three whiskies onto a desert island, what would they be and why?
Oh, if I could only take three whiskies, I really like Rassie whiskey. I think, you know, it's one of the new whiskies that I think they've done incredibly well in what they've made. I like their original one. I really like the kind of red caster from. So I would take a Rassie whiskey, something new. I think I would take a blend. I actually think I would take something genuinely like Johnny Walker, so I could remember that the entire industry is based on blends. Because you would remember home and you'd remember like the huge industry exists because of this bottle. So I'd probably take a Johnny Walker. And my third one would probably have to be Lagavulin. Just because when I started doing my book, it was the thing that made me realise the different breadths of whiskies and how differently they could all taste. So those would be my three Desert Island Drams. And I don't know what my three chocolates would be.
I was going to say, do they all go with chocolate?
All go with chocolate. I think I would just take all of the chocolate, basically. Like, if somebody could tell me I was going to this desert island, I would just go down to Cameron's and just go, please give me all of your chocolate. I want all of Bare Bones chocolate and I want all of everybody else's chocolate. Then I will just spend the rest of my life with these three whiskies and trying all the chocolate.
So what's the difference between you guys and chocolatiers?
So the difference is that we make the chocolate from scratch. So we import cocoa beans. Because we import the cocoa beans and we roast them and then we grind them and conch them before tempering them into bars, it means we can tailor our process to get all these incredible flavours from the cocoa bean and make the most incredible chocolate. Whereas a chocolatier, they buy in Couverture chocolate. And then melt it down and maybe add flavourings and different things or add other ingredients. So that's the real difference, is we make the chocolate from bean to bar.
And is that quite rare?
So there's a handful of people in the UK doing it. There's a lot more in America. America's about 10 years ahead of the UK. But we see that coming over to the UK. There's more makers trying chocolate, making chocolate, and the industry's really growing here.
There's part of the podcast called My Life in Food, so it's five questions to do with food, if you just tell me the first thing that comes into your head. So whenever I'm hungry, I think of...
Lasagna.
Comfort food for me is...
Probably lasagna.
My favourite childhood dessert is...
It was chocolate.
My food heaven is...
Lasagna.
And my food hell is...
Negronis.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for having us.
Next up, I met with Jamie Hutchin of Coco Ooze to talk about what he's learned about this ever-popular food product since he started his business as a teenager. We are here today to talk all about chocolates, which is a great topic of conversation. But before we get into all that, how did the business come about? Have you come from a kind of foodie background, or how did it all start?
I've founded the business when I was 17, back in 2008, so quite a number of years ago. My background is a chef. I started in catering from about 13 years old, helping a friend's pub, making some meals at the weekend. I then started an apprenticeship in food at a five-star hotel in Aberdeen and really started to fall in love with the patisserie side. And what I found quite interesting was how intricate it was. It wasn't just a case of how to make a batch of scones with my nana when I was 8 years old. It was actually the intricate things that can go really right or also can go quite wrong in the kitchen. And one thing when I was doing my apprenticeship was actually the chocolate side was so fascinating. And I think what I was more used to was just consuming a bar of chocolate and not realising actually what goes into a bar of chocolate. It was more about the, you know, me enjoying it and tasting it. I then went on a training course and learned all about the art of chocolate making, and that's when I really fell in love with it. And what I most enjoyed about it was, you know, the understanding the flavours and infusions and different compositions that chocolate can create and really have a different textures and mouthfeel on it. So I've got that foodie background. I'm a complete foodie at heart.
And do you come from a family of foodies?
I'm probably the only family member that's kind of took the catering career path, but my nana was involved in kitchens very early days, but not so much from my kind of my parents, brothers or sisters. I kind of was the kind of first one in my immediate family to take that, and a huge step, you know, leaving school, you know, not so much academically, going straight into kitchens, working 18-19 hours a week. But what I liked about it is the buzz, the creativity in that.
And do you remember what your first kind of memory of food is? Like, do you have a sort of standout thing where you think, wow, that's kind of what got me into like this love of it?
I think my standout memory was probably helping my mum and nan in the kitchen baking. I remember every year from my 8th birthday, I always used to get something related to kitchen or the new gadget. I remember one year getting a Jamie Oliver cook set and apron, and I thought I was the best chef in the whole wide world, and I was going to, you know, be on TV and do all this in future. So it was quite an interesting, you know, from such a young age, and that's all I kind of, all I knew was food. My hobby was the kitchen, effectively, and that's all I knew. So I probably had a career destined for me by my love, but I think that equated probably to my love for eating the product as well. Like us all, you know, we're probably all natural foodies at heart, but for me it's both sides, the making and the eating. I think some people can be very much enjoy making it, you know, or vice versa, but certainly I call it quality controlling.
Yeah, that's a good point. And do you yourself, this is probably a daft question, but do you yourself have quite a sweet tooth?
Yes. And I think the key thing is everything in moderation. But for me, I am a, you know, I'm a chocolate, you know, fiend at heart. I love testing new products. I'm probably a, you know, a milk chocolate kind of guy if we're going to profile it. But something simple, orange, honeycomb, these sort of things. I also do like to be quite adventurous with some of the products that we do try to make, but I do like things sweet. But I'm always disappointed normally when I go out to a lot of places. So I tend to have a starter because I don't then have to be disappointed on my dessert, because I'm always quite a bad critic when it comes to that. And I normally just say how I feel. So from that perspective, I kind of stick to a starter. And then, you know, at least if I make something myself, I'll know I'll be happy with it, using good quality chocolate or whatever it may be within that product.
So can you just talk us through, for anyone that doesn't know, the sort of process of being a chocolatier and making chocolate? One of the guests on the podcast is Bare Bones, and I know they make chocolate, but it's a little bit different for a chocolatier, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. So there's quite a lot of different intricate stages onto it. So we are a secondary manufacturer, which basically we add value through our tempering process. We add value through ingredients and flavours. So we buy a single noted chocolate that, you know, comes from lots of different cocoa farmers around the world. The chocolate is then come to us in a format where we can then process it into final products. And that's where we really add value. So that flavours that we have, so for instance, our licorice and black pepper, we actually profile the notes that, you know, go well with a gin. That was also a Scotland Food and Drink Award winner back in 2018, I think that was. And for us, it is about that experience led, that we really are the creative chocolatier. And that could come from anything from our products, but also our experiences we have. So chocolate making is quite a complex subject area. If you're making from bean to bar, you know, it's quite a long process. Your batch flavour profile can change. And we have done some of that in the past, but where kind of customers sit is really that added value that we offer within our products that we create.
And would there be any part of your job that you would think that people might find surprising?
And that's a really interesting question. And I think what people think is they almost think you're a Willy Wonka, and they almost think you've got this Oompa Loompas in the background and chocolate rivers and all that. And it's very much stainless steel tables, you know, melting tanks. It's a very different setup than probably what people think it is. More from a production setup. And I think people just think that we get to play about all day and make new flavours. The most surprising thing is probably batch sizes. You know, when we're making something, you know, we're still a relatively small manufacturer processing about 5 to 6 tons of chocolate per year. But we still make everything batch size. So the largest truffle batch, we'll do 250 chocolates at a time. I always came up the same analogy, and it was actually my nana that taught me, if you try to double a recipe, it doesn't always work. And I always think that's the same in chocolate making. It doesn't quite work out. The flavour profile, the balancing changes. So I think that's probably the most surprising thing, is the batch sizes that we do as a company, and also the labour it takes. Because people think, well, you make more quantity, the time should be less because you can automate things. With us, unfortunately, we could be making 2,000 chocolates, but that's still 8 batches we need to make to, you know, to create that. So it's still the same process that's involved within that. But then Christmas time, if we need extra resources, it's not machinery, it's personnel we take on, you know, to in order to fulfill that demand, to make sure we can really, you know, hit the requirements for our quantities that we need to create.
And something else you offer is chocolate classes. So how did all that come about?
So chocolate classes have been probably 8-9 years now, probably 2011, 2012, roughly, maybe about that time. We actually started working with some stockers that we supply, and we started doing tastings, and people were interested in, you know, the product that I was making, and it wasn't mainstream, and it was very different to what they were used to. And people were started interested, you know, how did you make these? And folks said, oh, I would love to learn that. And I went, actually, well, if I've got a skill, why can't I share my skill and share my knowledge? So we started doing a test, and the first couple of classes were oversubscribed. So we then started going, well, there's obviously a demand here. We started getting inquiries for kids' birthday parties and adults' workshops. And, you know, pre-COVID, you know, we were doing about 220 parties and workshops per year. Our numbers are slightly down at the moment, you know, due to various factors beyond our control. But you know, what we're trying to be is a destination place, so people will come to us. So we do workshops for kids' birthday parties or kids' workshops that can just come and make some chocolate with us. We also do adults' workshops, and that's when they can make their own chocolate as well. So we offer different formats. We've had things like corporate bookings and hen parties. So we're quite flexible in our offering that we do have for that. They are unique in I normally personally take some of the workshops myself. I quite like seeing that my skill, you know, can be taught to people, and, you know, they can enjoy it. We've got people from home bakers coming on to this, you know, people just who love chocolate, just find out a bit more about the interesting process. We've also trained chefs in the past that have come onto our workshops. We've also trained some chocolate companies. So I think for us, it's about that sort of community, and, you know, the things that people use in a workshop, they can then buy from us. So we're trying to create that kind of community of kind of creative people. And it's amazing when you start seeing the attendees on your workshop, you know, posting on social media about some of the stuff they've made. And the biggest thing about it is having fun. You know, the structure to our workshops is very, you know, lots of choices to be made, but it is very enjoy yourself and, you know, do something different. And I think that's where the experience really comes in.
So you're based up in Aberdeen. Does your location in the northeast of Scotland affect the flavours that you create?
Interesting. So we do take inspiration from some of the areas, but the challenge we've always got is our products come from warmer climates. We did actually try to grow chocolate in the north of Scotland. No comment on how that went. Obviously not too well. The harsh environments that we do have. I love Aberdeen, and I think, you know, we've got a fantastic larder up here. The challenge in chocolate making is some of the products don't naturally always fit, because, you know, shelf life, one of the biggest things and one of the biggest barriers for us in order to do that. So we do try. So if we can get it locally, we try to go further afield. So our salted caramel bars, Isle of Skye sea salt in it, you know, so we try where possible, try to offer that something that has got local. We're proud to only use Scottish and UK suppliers or distributors. And I think that's quite a unique point in chocolate. All our packaging is bought locally. Our labels are made just down in Edinburgh. And I think for us, it's a huge part of adding value to our supply chain within local and national economies. But I think, yeah, the flavour profile, we're really determined by what our customers want. We will always continue to sell things like the honeycomb and raspberry bars, that will always do well. But what we do add is different. So at the moment, you know, we're doing things like Cranach and truffles and haggis flavours and whiskey flavour truffles, and we use local whiskey. And I think there's a huge market for that. But then we offer something different with like our licorice and black pepper or maple and pecan bar or gin and tonic. So I think what we're trying to do is we're trying to be creative but have something that suits a wide marketplace, because everybody has got different tastes and textures and styles that they like. So we really try to showcase that within our ranges that we create.
I feel like chocolate pairings have become quite popular just now, and one of the things we've talked about is whiskey and chocolate pairing, but we're also, you know, you can also do gin and chocolate pairing. So how do you feel about that, and does that kind of thing sort of drive some of your inspiration for flavours?
Absolutely. You know, with us having the tagline of the creative chocolatier, we've always got a creative element to our business. And it was actually a good couple of years ago we actually started doing tasting events when we had our retail premises, and we did gin and chocolate, wine and chocolate, rum and chocolate, whiskey and chocolate tastings. The most popular one, surprisingly, was actually gin and chocolate, because a lot of people, you know, chocolate doesn't naturally profile match with gin, but what we did was picked up the flavours, the botanicals in the chocolate. And that was actually one of our bars. The licorice and black pepper was matched with a gin here in Aberdeen. And that's where it went on to actually win the Scotland Food and Drink Award, because it was so different and it was actually really enhancing the flavour profile within the gin, but equally the flavour profile in the gin enhanced the chocolate. So it was really a kind of, you know, a match made in heaven from that perspective. And whiskey is probably one of the single markets that's still really important to us. We supply a lot of distilleries. We also private label products and make for other people as well. We also supply the Scotch Whiskey Experience in Edinburgh. We've done that for a number of years now. So we profile a Highland, a Lowland, Speyside, Islay and a Campbelltown bar. And that's really, you know, a single kind of noted flavour that should match the complexities within that region of whiskies that sit within it. So I continue to see that experimental flavour profile equally as being as strong in the future, because we get the inquisitive consumer, and I think that for us is a very important for us to, in order to keep innovating and have that marketplace.
So we're in February now and Valentine's Day is just around the corner. So is that quite a busy time of year for you?
Historically, Valentine's Day was never a busy time, and I don't mean to profile here, but I'm a typical gent, last minute. So we actually this year have invested in new products. We've got 6 new products for Valentine's Day and ready for dispatch, so we're ready for last minute purchasers as well, and to make sure they do get there for the day. And but we've really actually, you know, invested a lot of imagery on our website, really to showcase our quality of products through screen, and really trying to get people to understand, you know, who we are, what we're about. We've got some personalised options there. We've got our heart hot chocolate bombs. So instead of doing the standard round ones, you know, we went the heart shape this year. So really done something slightly different. And when you look at our range against a lot what's in the marketplace, what we're trying to do is have that unique offering within our products. So I hope, you know, that we've had some pre-orders in already, which has been really fantastic. So it helps us forecast and demand, and that will then lead us into making some more writing up until the day. And I really hope that people enjoy our creations.
Nice. And do you have any plans yourself, or is it going to be last minute?
I've got a few tricks up my sleeve, I should say. I should have mentioned we've also got workshops that are now actually sold out, unfortunately, that are just a day or two before Valentine's Day, that we've kind of made a bit more of a Valentine's kind of effort to it. But me and my wife have been married for a couple of years now, and we always kind of say, you know, the usual cliche, we'll need each other, you know, it's fine. And I always just say, I'll give you some chocolates, you know. And obviously, it's a thought about gift, of course it is, you know. I think about a gift occasion months ahead, because obviously being in the marketplace that I am in and the business is in, we, you know, you've got to think constantly, you know. So if it's not Christmas, you're thinking about that in January, and if it's Valentine's Day, you're thinking about that in September. So you're always ahead of yourself thinking about it. So when it comes to the occasion, I continue to say to my wife that it's a thought out gift, because it's been thought out for months ahead, even though it's just a box of chocolates.
So, Jamie, it's been quite a difficult couple of years with COVID. So what do you think the food and drink landscape is going to be like for this year?
First of all, I think we are blessed in Scotland, and I probably take it for advantage, actually, that the diversity and rich larder that we do have right on our doorstep. And I think what actually the last 18 months, 2 years have really taught us is to actually, you know, look around the doors, look around the corner to actually see, is there a local producer doing that? I firmly believe there's a marketplace for everybody, you know, from, you know, big organisations right to small. It's all about partnership working. And I think the key thing to that is everyone's offering something unique and different. So I know if I go to a farmer's market, I might get something unique that I maybe won't find in a supermarket. But I might also get that, you know, vice versa as well. So I think it's a really good marketplace for that. I think our strength of our food and drink economy is outstanding. The challenge that we have is we don't shout about it enough. You know, we are proud compared to some other countries of what we've got right here in Scotland, right on our doorstep. And what I would urge people to do is really investigate that further. Go on experiences, go on foodie adventures, you know, really showcase that. Of course, I'm going to be biased for the northeast of Scotland. You know, we've got some great producers here, but I think, you know, across Scotland, we are a food loving nation. And I think the key thing is fall in love about that a bit more and really support that economy. And I'm always keen to get people into the sector. I'm always getting people to get, you know, wanting to find out more about, you know, the food and drink sector. And I've had numerous conversations, you know, it is hard work, but it's such a rewarding career. And it's afforded me some, you know, some nice times. There's been good times and bad, you know, being an entrepreneur. But I think, you know, I wouldn't change it. And being a foodie at heart, I think that really, really does help for such a career that I've had to date.
So we've talked a little bit about chocolate and gin pairing, how that came about for you. But would you say overall, is your chocolate, does it lend itself to any particular specific pairing? So is there anyone that goes well with wine or other foods? How would you kind of, if somebody was looking for that kind of thing, what would you say works well with pairings?
I think, because we've all got different complexities of palates, I think what might work for me doesn't always work for somebody else. I actually got a flavour thesaurus many years ago before we started our tastings, and it's amazing what they think, what food goes together, but surprising, some of it actually does go together. And that's why some of our flavour combination does. So for instance, wine, you know, instantly, you know, people always say dark chocolate with red wine, you know, and actually, you know, the white or the milk should be a bit more, you know, the rosé or the white wine. Again, if you want, you know, dark chocolate or white wine, what works for you might not work for me. So I think each to the individual from that perspective. But what I would say to people is really be adventurous with it. And just because you don't think it might work, actually could really work. And I think that's what I've tried to do through our tastings and our workshops, is really kind of distill that creativity in people and try that flavours and try to see if it works, because you'll be surprised actually what does work. And yeah, the key to this whole idea of food pairing for me was this flavour thesaurus, and it was actually a wine expert that actually put me onto it. And when we're doing the wine tastings, I was like, how am I going to come up with these, you know, unique ideas, because I've got 101 ideas in my mind and I'm really trying to distill them into what would actually work for you know, an audience that's got different palates. And that can be a challenge, because you're trying to preempt something that you think is, you know, fantastically but you might not get such a, you know, a warm response. Every time we always did a tasting, we always did, you know, a bit of feedback, you know, what did you, do you think it worked, you know, and if it didn't work, we'd then refine that process. And what you actually find, there was some metrics into that of certain flavours that worked better with things that didn't, so then we could actually pull them out, put them into other products and showcase that flavour better. And that was really good from that perspective. So, you know, urge people to be creative, and there's no wrong answer. Whatever you think and your taste and palates, you know, and you enjoy that, you go for it. Because my, you know, go-to drink of, you know, rum or maybe white wine or cider or something will be very different to other people's palates.
And just finally, the last part of the podcast is a quick fire round called My Life in Food. So if you tell me the first thing that comes into your head of these questions. Okay.
That could be dangerous, but yeah.
Whenever I'm hungry, I think of
steak.
Comfort food for me is
fish and chips.
My favourite childhood dessert is
sticky toffee pudding, and still is.
My food heaven is
My food heaven. I'm going to have to put two courses into this, and I'm going to have to choose steak and sticky toffee pudding all day long.
And my food hell is
really strong fish. I'm not really a big kind of fish. I like kind of haddock and salmon, but yeah, fish, some really kind of strong fish, I would say. Not for me, unfortunately.
Well, thank you very much. And I'm looking forward to having some chocolate now.
And I'm sitting here going, it's cup of tea time and it's chocolate time.
Yeah, exactly. I'm thinking the exact same. Thanks to my guests on this episode, and thanks to you for listening. Please remember to rate, review and subscribe. Scran is a Laudable podcast that's co-produced and hosted by me, Rosalind Erskine, and co-produced, edited and mixed by Kelly Crichton.